Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, good morning. Happy 4th of July. Woo, fireworks, barbecue, time with family and loved ones. Oh, please have a wonderful holiday. And remember to act in love with every thought and every action. Today's lesson is just on that, how to move and act in love with every thought and every action. This is from Gary Zukav's book, Spiritual Partnership, The Journey to Your Authentic Power. Enjoy this replay. I'm Cynthia Johnson, and I'm your host this morning, along with Dr. Reggie Johnson, who's here with us, as well as Gloria Wells, who monitors our chat room. And we are in the book study of A Spiritual Partnership by Gary Zukav. And we're in the chapter entitled Conscious Communications and Actions. This is the ultimate journey to authentic power. We're learning the difference between external power and authentic power. We are learning that we are multisensory beings. We're evolving to multisensory beings instead of five sensory beings. And I'm repeating a lot of these points because many of you may not have joined us before, so I want you to know what we're talking about, why we're talking about it, and how delicious this journey has been. Good morning, Dr. Reggie. How are you this morning?
I am magnanimous. Thank you so much for asking me. I feel wonderful this morning.
You know how I know you feel good this morning?
Hmm?
Do you know how I know how good you feel this morning?
How do you know?
Because you got up before I did. You made me breakfast. Hey, I had champagne and orange juice this morning. I love it.
Great.
That's how I know you're feeling well.
Oh, good.
So, Dr. Reggie, how have you enjoyed this book? Hasn't it been amazing?
It has, because you know what? A lot of times people, as humans, we don't realize sometimes how we communicate with people and what we're saying. Even non-verbally, there's so many things being said that you don't have to say with language. And people pick up on it. We are more sensitive than we realize. You can tell people's feelings just by their actions. A lot of times it can be very subtle. So Gary Zukav has tapped into something very powerful here and teaching us about non-verbal communication, multisensory communication, which is beyond our normal five senses, and how to evolve in a more loving, conscious, sensitive, and aware way.
Yes. And since there's been so much time between Friday was Oracle Friday, and I guess everybody had checked out for the weekend, so we had a very slow day that day for calls. But and so I tapped into beginning, well, I shifted into beginning to teach from Chapter 27 on conscious communication and actions. But I'm going to roll back and start over.
Oh, God, no, please. I'm just kidding. I think they got the message. Some people do. And some people who weren't here, I'm sure they listened to the archive, I'm sure. I hope they did anyway.
Well, you know, whenever we have a break in our studies, I kind of roll back to pick up so that people can kind of pick up the flow.
I know you do. I'm teasing you.
You are?
I am. Being silly.
So now you're making me conscious. Maybe
now, see, now that's what I don't want to do. See, see. Conscious communication.
Yes. What was your conscious communication?
To make you aware. I'm just being funny. Just having fun with you.
Oh, okay.
You can tell I feel better.
Yes, I can, because you're messing with me.
I know, exactly.
All right. So let's kind of go back and review conscious communication and actions. He subtitles this chapter, Striving to Make All My Interactions Conscious and Living. So, Dr. Reggie, how would you define conscious?
Aware, like consciousness itself. Consciousness is a unit of awareness. If you're self-conscious, you know who you are. And you're beyond just you as an individual and a personality. But there's something deeper and much more poignant to make you more aware of who you are as a person on this planet. And you're aware of nature itself. So that's a very powerful thing. Conscious, you're fully aware of what's going on and responsible for that awareness.
Okay, so here's Gary Zukav is saying, you want to be aware of your interactions with others.
Yes.
Your intentions.
Yes.
With others. And so you want to be aware, but you also want to be loving. So let's go through and quickly review. Creating authentic power. Oh, well, thank you, Dr. Reggie. We need to do morning prayer first.
Were you conscious at that time?
I wasn't conscious.
I'm being funny again, Cynthia.
I was not aware.
Exactly. You're moving right into it. Okay, let's get ourselves poised for the morning prayer. As we take a deep breath in, we realize that we're on this planet and we're not alone. No matter what we go through, we have the power and the energy of God the Creator, the force in our lives that rules everything on this planet, including in our bodies, in our affairs, and everything that we do, in our money, or even lack of our money, provisions made for us. Thank you, Father, for divine providence. We thank you for living. We thank you for breathing and having friends, and that we're never alone. When we think we're alone, you're right here with us, always, from birth until life, until afterlife. We thank you for every aspect of being. Let us become consciously aware of ourselves as loving instruments in your service, directed by the Holy Spirit. I believe it is so, and so it is.
And so it is. Thank you so much, Dr. Reggie. So creating authentic power encompasses the totality of your life, your whole life. And it envelops all of your experiences. It includes all of your emotions and your thoughts, and it reveals all of your intentions. That's a big statement. There's no interaction. There's a person, a circumstance, or experience that is excluded, because your whole life conserves the creation of authentic power. Nothing is too big. Nothing is too important. Nothing is too monumental to be excluded. Everything. Nothing is too small or too insignificant or too unimportant that cannot be included. Because attempting to create authentic power without using everything in your life is like trying to swim without water. And we talked about this. I love this image. He says, you can imagine swimming. You can picture it. You can read about it. You can be inspired by it. You can even practice moving your arms and your head as though you were swimming. But without water, you cannot swim. So the gist of what he's saying here is that all of your experiences and your interactions are opportunities for you to choose to move from your creative, your authentic power. To choose love instead of fear. That's the whole gist of this chapter. To choose love instead of fear in every interaction, moment by moment by moment. And to be consciously aware of that takes practice until it becomes automatic for you. So now, what happens to many of us, someone looks at, they won't even say anything. Have you ever walked into a room and someone is staring at you and you're thinking, why are they staring at me? Oh, what's going on? You start feeling insecure and blah, 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 blah. And they just may be looking in your direction, not even thinking about you, but this is how you respond to that situation. And that's all of your little fears and insecurities that rise up. And that's not even talking about words being exchanged, just a look. So that every instance, every experience in your life is an opportunity for you to choose to respond with love. So your mission, that's a Dr. Reggie's thing, should you decide to accept it, is to choose to respond in love today in every one of your actions and interactions and thoughts and deeds. Consciously choose love. Practice today and see how quickly you can remember. Okay? I'm just going to hit on a couple of other things that really jumped out at me. He says, until you learn to swim, events and circumstances overwhelm you. You long for what you do not have and fear to lose what you have. And the frightened parts of your personality determine your perceptions and experiences and intentions. Your fear life and your fear, you fear life and you fear death. You pray for divine intervention without understanding its purpose to assist you in living a life of love, gratitude, and fulfillment, not to relieve you of the work that you were born to do. Not to relieve you of the work that you were born to do. And there are two ways that you can interpret this, and I think both are correct. I don't think either one is wrong. There's a surface meaning and there's a deeper meaning. He says you pray for divine intervention without understanding its purpose, which is to assist you in living a life of love, gratitude, and fulfillment. But we're praying to relieve us from the work that we were born to do. In other words, we are praying, saying, please take this away from me. Please help me overcome this. But really and truthfully, the prayer should say, please help me to see this with love, to be grateful for this experience. This is not a rescue mission. There's nothing to rescue you from. Your prayer should be to move you through this experience with grace and love and understanding and gratitude and spiritual growth. And that is a big, huge difference, isn't it? And guess what? When you're praying in that reality, the stress begins to leave. Which indicates to me, a strong indicator to me, that we're creating the stress. If I'm worried, if I'm trying to calculate how this is and strategize and manipulate and control, hello, what am I doing? I'm using my external power. And it's actually diminishing my effectiveness. Multisensory perception illuminates a higher order of reasoning and justice. A higher order. Your higher self. It reveals relationships between the outer world and the inner world that five sensory humans do not see. Five sensory humans believe that their emotional experiences are caused by external circumstances. But multisensory humans know that their emotional experiences are independent external circumstances. Five sensory humans see their lives as obstacle courses or random impositions of a cruel universe. But multisensory humans see each life as a journey through an educational environment that is designed for the benefit of souls learning to grow spiritually through the choices that their personalities make. So, really and truthfully, I hope for each of you that you're moving through life's challenges now, the little dramas that you have created in your life, understanding that they're there for the purpose to teach you. I mean, if you've been with Circles of Prosperity any length of time, you should, every challenge that occurs, even though it may be uncomfortable, you should say to yourself, I know there's something I'm supposed to be learning here. There's something I need to learn from this experience, and I'm grateful for this opportunity. Rather than, oh, Lord. Why? It is so liberating to live your life from that place of full confidence that all is in divine order. That's how you get there. The first is recognizing this is a lesson and I embrace it. What is that? The fact that you're embracing it means what? There's no resistance. Who can tell me what no resistance means? Press 1 on your telephone keypad. Or if you're in our chat room, type it out. I say it all the time. What is no resistance? Anybody? Any takers? Right. No resistance is no fear. And what does that leave us to? Anyone? It leaves nothing. Loving actions. Amen. So no resistance equals perfect love. That's all that's left. So if you want to take it in the steps, no resistance means that there's absolutely no fear, which leaves nothing but love. That means you're getting to the pure essence of who you are, equaling meaning love. Why? Because God is what? God is love. And the essence of who you are is God within you. So, there's this higher order, and it reveals relationships between the outer world and the inner world. I love this. But a five-sensory person is going to look at these circumstances and think that they're under attack. As a matter of fact, if you grew up in the fundamentalist church, they're saying, oh, you're under attack. Oh, Satan is attacking you. Oh, Lord. And you know, as a child hearing that, that was very frightening for me. Extremely frightening. And I felt helpless. How can I fight Satan? I mean, I can't even see it. So how can I begin to fight it? But when you shift all of this into your consciousness, which is really and truthfully what the Bible is saying, the duality of man, this battle between fear and faith, and that you're in control of the battle, you're in control of your mind field. Which one will win? And here's where Gary Zukav is going, that when you eliminate this fear, you're clearing the battlefield, and the only thing that can exist is pure love. I love the example that he gives at the end of this chapter. It's regarding Gandhi. When Gandhi visited the Pashtun people near Khyber Pass, in what was then the northwest frontier province of India, his friends cautioned him, oh, these people are fighters. And he said, well, I too am a fighter. And then he said, I want to teach them how to fight without violence and how to fight without fear. And so what does he do? He confronts them. He says, are you afraid? And he says, why else would you be carrying guns? He says, I have no fear. That is why I am unarmed. And at the end of the interaction, this tall Pashtun. His name was Khan Abdul Ghaffar Khan. He put down his rifle and the others followed. And this giant of a man became a dedicated companion of Gandhi, accompanying him unarmed on many of Gandhi's courageous challenges to policies of the British government. Khan Abdul Ghaffar Khan appears in many pictures with Gandhi, always easy to identify because he's towering above those around him. But this interaction was loving. I carry no weapons because I have no fear. Wow. Are you talking about that's real authentic power, isn't it? To have a group of people lay down their arms. Wow. So the creation of authentic power brings you into the world, not away from it. It connects you with your fellow souls, not separates you from them. Your interactions with others are the bottom line of your spiritual development. You cannot become spiritually evolved and remain in the control of the frightened parts of your personality, because frightened parts of your personality create unconscious and unloving interactions. So whatever you call your path, it is not spiritual if your interactions are not becoming more conscious and more loving. Your interactions with others really show you where you have more work to do. Remember we said that when some person is irritating you, it's really a reflection of something that's inside of you, that same thing that's inside of you that you need to work on. They are a mirror of what you need to improve upon. Your interactions with others show you where you have more work to do. And they also show you the distance that you have traveled. Oh, how many of you can remember when you responded a certain way to certain things? And now it means absolutely nothing to you, that you can laugh at it. I was sharing with you the other day about all the drama that was occurring in my life, and, you know, in particular, dealing with my car. And it's just one drama, piece of drama right after another. And every time something breaks on a car, I'm a typical woman, I think, because I go, oh, my God, this is going to cost me a fortune. I mean, you just have all these images of total disaster because your car isn't working right, right? But in my spirit is now telling me, oh, honey, it's probably just a belt that needs to replace, something minor that's not that important. And I try to calm myself down through the experience. What am I doing? I'm eliminating my fear and dealing with it from a place of love. And the lesson for me is that everything is always in divine order, that I don't need to sweat bullets. It'll work out. So guess what? I got my car repaired. And the mechanic came to my house and I didn't have to tow my car. And he was a beautiful, beautiful spirit, and I just absolutely loved him. And I loved him even more after he fixed my car. You know, so I met this beautiful person, and he was so loving. I mean, I was just thrilled that my car had somebody to love it as much as I did. And he gave the car personality. He says, you know, she's getting old and you have to be tender with her. Wasn't that precious? So you see, every piece of drama is an opportunity. It's an opportunity to grow. An opportunity to grow. So let's look at, and he ends the chapter with what I call the four C's. He says, creating authentic power produces conscious and loving interactions. And creating conscious and loving interactions is necessary to creating authentic power. So you need commitment, you need courage, you need compassion, and conscious communications and actions to merge in the creation of authentically powered life. So let's look at his guidelines. He says, the demeanor of an old acquaintance surprised me several years earlier. He had appeared lighthearted, innocent, and cheerful, but now he was troubled and sullen. He had inherited a small house, he told me, moved into it, and rented his home. But now his renters were months behind in their payments. They were vandalizing his house and enjoying free utilities because the accounts were still in his name. There is nothing I can do, he explained. Eviction in my state is so slow, and it's an expensive process. And meanwhile, I'm seeing my house damaged, losing rental income, and paying the mortgage on the house and their utilities. So he had traveled to several countries as a volunteer missionary with his church. He saw himself as a generous and kind person before this experience, but he was not prepared for the unexpected emotions and the thoughts and fantasies that flooded him now. They troubled him more than the financial hardship he faced, confusing him and causing him to question his goodness and his values and his intentions. So you see, the spiritual partnership guidelines are designed for precisely this kind of situation. They're designed for every kind of situation. The conscious communications and actions and guidelines are a shorthand checklist for creating authentic power. So the following are some examples of how they might be applied to my acquaintance's circumstances. And I just, as I'm reading this and sharing this with you, I want you to imagine how they might apply even to your own circumstances. His first instruction is to consult your intuition. Why? Intuition is access to compassion and wisdom that is beyond what we are able to give one another. Dr. Reggie says, when you pray, you're talking to God. When you meditate, God is talking to you. When you tap into your intuition, God is talking to you. Your higher self is communicating with you. The universe is communicating with you. The source of all wisdom is communicating with you. So it is a communication with non-physical guides and teachers whose only interest is your spiritual growth. It's pure love. There's no hidden agenda other than to get you there, to get you out of your mess, to gently show you how to maneuver through your drama and to grow from it. So the second part is to listen for the answer. And the answer will always come. Although perhaps not in the way or at the time that you expect, there are many ways that my acquaintance could have approached his tenants directly. He could have approached them through an attorney. He could have approached them delicately, bluntly. But when you ask, what would be the most appropriate way to do what I want to do? And in this case, he wants to move the tenants out of his house. You will always have insight. And you know, the line that we see a lot in intention, I mean, in unity, when they're teaching intention, is to ask, what is for the highest good of all involved? Okay? Now, he goes on to say that your answer might come while you're in the shower. That is definitely the best place for me. All of my ideas and every answer happens when I'm standing in the shower. And don't let me start singing. It really comes. So, or you can be out for a walk or driving to work. It's the place where you can be centered and you can actually hear that small voice inside of you. Now, it may not be what you want to hear. Answers that come from your intuition will often surprise you, because your intellect will always rationalize what you want to do. Here's step A, step B. It's very linear. Step C, that's how your mind thinks, your rational mind. But let me tell you, and you got many of you know this and have experienced this, God does not have work from your rational mind. It's coming from a higher place. And so there begins the resistance, doesn't it? Oh, that'll never work. Oh, I can't do that. And we begin to ignore and not trust. So here's my famous line here, not my line. Actually, it comes from Deepak Chopra's The Way of the Wizard. Have trust in trust and faith in faith. Okay, so your intuitive insights are not directives or instructions or commandments. Your non-physical teachers will not tell you what to do, but they will lead you to the full scope and depth of your creative capacity and help you see options that you have maybe not thought about and consider the consequences of that each will create, because only you can decide how you will use your will to shape energy into matter and what karma you will create, because responsibility for your choices is always yours alone. No matter whom you consult in the process of making them, including your non-physical teachers. In other words, he's saying including God. You know, I don't know. I've been on this thing where I think it's so important to say, to be courageous enough to, number one, to say God, but to also let you know that it has many other meanings, or it has many other names. So this could be God to him, it's your non-physical teachers. To others, it's the universe. Even to others, it's source. To others, it's my higher self. It doesn't matter what the name is. And I want you guys to always remember that. It does not matter what the name is. But you know it is your creator. Right? You know that it is something higher than you. That is a part of you. Okay. So that's the first thing, to consult your intuition. Second step, which is to choose your intention before you speak or act. So this requires you to just stop for a moment and think, doesn't it? First you got to consult your intuition. Then you have to wait for an answer. And then you have to make the choice to respond with love, because you know that there are going to be consequences to your response. And who can fight with love? So, choose your intention. Why? Intentions are causes that create effects. Choosing an intention is the fundamental creative act. When you decide, when you intend something, that's the beginning of creation. So let's go back to the creation story in the Bible. God said, I intend for there to be light here. And what happened? There was some light. Okay, so an intention is the reason, or it's the motivation for doing what you do. Every action has an intention. And every intention comes from a loving part of your personality or a frightened part of your personality. And the same action can have different intentions. For example, the motivation for making a lot of money might be to buy stylish clothing or a beautiful car that will attract attention and recognition. Or it might be to pay school expenses for a child. But the first intention is the pursuit of external power. And the second creates authentic power. Why? I want a lot of money so I can buy a car. That's seeking external power. I need to make a lot of money to help put my child through college. That's seeking authentic power. The intention. Now, even trying to put a child through college, is that so that you can feel good or make you look important? Is that the intention? Or are you really concerned about the child's development and well-being? You see, it's a double-edged sword. So when you choose your intention before you speak and before you act, you choose the consequences that your words or actions will create. If you do not choose your intentions consciously, you will choose them unconsciously. And if you're choosing unconsciously, it's basically coming from the frightened parts of your personality. And therefore, your frightened parts of your personality are choosing for you, are dictating your life. He says that you can always recognize the consequences of unconscious choices. These are choices made outside of your awareness because they hurt when you encounter them. They hurt. Isn't that something? So the more you explore your intentions, the more you will see that no matter how many options you appear to have, you actually have only two: love and fear. And your loving intentions create authentic power. So if you're not certain of your intention, ask yourself before you speak or act, what is my motivation here? You will not be alone in your assessment. This is a fail-safe way to consult intuition. If your intuition is anything except harmony, cooperation, sharing, or reverence for life, if it is not to care for others or to support others and contribute constructively to life without second agendas, it will be to manipulate and control. He breaks it down and he makes it very simple, doesn't he? There's no gray area here. Either you're loving and supporting life or you're trying to manipulate and control it. No gray area. So he said his acquaintance could have asked himself each time before he spoke with his tenants, what is my motivation? And then used his painful experiences with them to create authentic power by choosing a loving intention each time he discovered that he was about to speak or act with an intention that was not loving. I don't know how loving I could be. I mean, that's a challenge to have people there and you're resenting that they're in your home and destroying your home and you're paying the mortgage for it. That takes a lot of work. Do you see why you have to practice? I'm just curious. What could he have done that would have been loving? Anybody have an idea to work through that issue? What could he have done? Anyone? Think about it. If you come up with an answer, press 1 on your telephone keypad and share it with me. Okay, so he also says to act from the healthiest part of your personality so that you can access, rather than caretaking and fixing and teaching and judging and blaming and gossiping. Whoa! Act from the healthiest part of your personality. That means choosing to act from the loving part of your personality while you are feeling the painful sensations of a frightened part of your personality. And guess what he says? That's the moment that you are gaining traction on your spiritual path. Wow. Okay, I've got somebody who says, okay, and I'm sorry, I'm trying to read Gloria's message. I thought she had the answer for me, but that's okay, Gloria. You've got great comments here. So choosing to act from the healthiest part of your personality that you can find instead of one that is less healthy is the step that stretches you beyond the limitations of the frightened parts of your personality. Because the moment when authentic power is created, the instant where spiritual growth occurs is in that moment when you are choosing to act from the healthiest part of your personality. And all of this is depending on your choice. There's a lot going on before you open your mouth, huh? And you know, what amazes me when I stop and think how quickly, you know, we will jump on somebody to prove that we're right. Not thinking of the consequences, where that altercation is going to take us. Look at the young boy down in Florida that was killed. Trayvon Martin at any point, I don't know all the drama there. Nobody really knows the story. The only person who really knows what happened there, is coming from his perspective. But if he had just decided, okay, I've reported this, I'm concerned about this person not being, could be possibly trying to break in, but I've reported it, I've done my part, I'll let it go. Or if he had just approached the guy, why would he have a gun on him? Leave the gun there. What was he fearing? If he had just approached a young man and said, we've had a lot of break-ins here and you don't look familiar in the neighborhood. May I ask, do you know someone here? Or, where do you live? Who are you visiting? I mean, he had so many options he could have, but he was operating from his place of fear. And look how it escalated. Someone is dead. Someone is dead. All right, I'm going to quickly finish this very quickly, and I want you to finish reading up this chapter on the guidelines so that you have a clear understanding, because we're running out of time this morning. But here's the other one. He says, speak personally and specifically rather than generally and abstract. Use I statements rather than we or you statements. So he says, my acquaintance told me, explaining his experiences as if they were the experiences of everyone. We are afraid of what we will do when we are angry. I am afraid of what I will do when I am angry. See the difference? You need to take ownership of what's going on with you. The next thing he says is to release attachment to the trust the universe. If I find myself attached, begin again with commitment, courage, and compassion. So you want to trust. You want to relax. You want to do your best. You want to enjoy yourself. And these are important guidelines. I want you to please finish reading them. Maybe we'll talk about them tomorrow. In the meantime, I'm going to ask Dr. Reggie to take us into our closing prayer.
From the depths of my soul, Father, to the heights of all which exists, I know as a multisensory being, my joy arises. I drink the elixir of happiness, and the world is filled with my delight. I thank you for this. All is right with the world, and the world is right with me. I thank you for nature, because the moon brings me sweet emotions, and the sun shines on me wherever I go, when I learn to trust and have faith in faith. We believe it is so, and so it is.